Welcome to Reading, Writing, Rolling, Imagination and Fiction in the Age of Harry Potter. This is episode 26, Humor in Harry Potter, Part 1, where Emily Strand and I will be talking with Louise Freeman and Caitlin Harper about Harry's funniest, wittiest, most amusing moments. For Reading, Writing, Rolling. I am your host, Katie McDaniel, professor of history at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, and co-editor of Harry Potter for Nerds 2. Today, my co-host is Emily Strand, instructor of comparative religions at Mount Carmel College of Nursing and author of numerous Harry Potter essays. Thanks for being my co-host for today's episode, Emily.
Well, I am delighted to be here, especially given the subject matter. I am tickled to be here. Discussing the hilarity of Harry Potter.
I know. And how did it take us so long to get to this topic? I don't know. It's such an important part of the books.
Yeah. And it's such a, you know, I've been listening a little bit to some podcasts about humor theory in the last couple of days, just trying to gear up for this conversation. There really is a lot to humor. And I think that it's a great undiscovered or undiscussed topic about Harry Potter. So I'm glad we're here to do this.
Yeah, awesome. I know, I was just astonished by all the humor research. I don't know why I was astonished, but there is a lot to say about it. So we'll have fun and we'll also, of course, put it under an academic lens as we are wont to do. The person that we have to thank for our topic today is Louise Freeman. And she is joining us as one of our guests today. Louise is professor of psychology at Mary Baldwin University, and she studies the psychology of Harry Potter and other young adult literature. Welcome back to the show, Louise, and thanks for this great show suggestion.
Well, thank you for picking up on it. You know, it's funny. I think I originally suggested this back in the MuggleNet Academia first anniversary round robin that... I don't know how many years ago that was, but it was just something I've always wanted to talk about, just because there are parts of these books that are just so funny, and humor is used in so many different ways to enhance the story. Some of my fondest memories are when I was reading the books aloud to my two kids as they were growing up, and the moments I remember the clearest are the ones where one or both of us just started laughing over something.
Yeah.
And when we were making up our list, and I know we'll get to all our lists later, but those were at the top of my list. The scenes that I remember just, you know, lying in the bed with my kids and the books and just roaring with laughter, or hearing my kids just giggle and giggle and giggle.
And I think we're going to be getting to a lot of those funny moments, and I asked my kids about what their favorite funny moments were, and they were different from some of the ones that I would have picked. So I think it's interesting. Different people have different things that strike them as funny. So also joining us today on the show is Caitlin Elizabeth Harper. She is an author, creative problem solver, community organizer, and wizard activist. She's a member of the NYDA, the New York City chapter of the Harry Potter Alliance, and the author of the young adult novel, It Will Set You Free. Thanks for joining us on the show, Caitlin.
Thanks. I'm so excited. I mean, after talking about Quidditch and now humor, if we do a podcast about food, those will be like probably my top three favorite topics.
Oh.
You got to invite me back if we talk about food. Harry Potter and food.
Oh, well, Harry Potter and food. That would be like.
I have a whole funny food category in my favorite funny moments list. So
really?
There's overlap.
Oh my gosh,
there's overlap.
So good. Do like a Harry Potter inspired recipe show.
That'd be
funny. Oh, fun.
And cocktails. Don't forget about the cocktails.
Yeah, right. Emily, you're like the master of the Harry Potter cocktail, right?
I'm the mixologist witch.
Mixologist. Yeah. Well, we are going to start today with just a high-speed round robin of our funniest Harry Potter moments. These are the ones that we think are the funniest, and hopefully listeners will, these will be some of the ones on your list too. We just want to remind ourselves of so many of the funny moments. I hadn't thought about a lot of them very carefully until I was, thinking about what are the funny moments. And I just was astonished by the sheer quantity of things that are funny in the books. So we're just going to kind of rattle off some of our favorite ones. And listeners, I hope some of yours will be in here too. And we're going to start with Louise. What is one of your funniest moments?
All right. I think this is probably my favorite scene in the entire series, if I had to pick one. It is Harry's career counseling session with McGonagall and Umbridge. And just from the beginning, when Umbridge is in there doing her hem, may I offer you a cough drop, Dolores? But the best line, of course, is McGonagall saying, "I should have made my meaning plainer," said Professor McGonagall, turning at last to look Umbridge directly in the eyes. "He has achieved high marks in all defense against the dark arts tests set by a competent teacher."
Yeah.
And then there's an explosion.
Burn.
Harry leaves, and he can hear them yelling at each other as he walks down the hall and gets out of there. And that's got to be just one of my favorite moments.
It's satisfying.
I have often said that if Dame Maggie Smith and Imelda Staunton want to raise money for charity, they could record this scene and, put it on YouTube, make us pay, $3 for it. And they could raise lots of money for charity that way, because I would pay good money to hear those two actresses.
Oh yeah.
Act out this particular scene.
That would be awesome if people are listening. That's a good fundraiser idea. Caitlin, what about you?
I am a huge fan of any professor on professor interaction as well. I think those are always like amazing, especially having grown up reading it as a kid. So the sort of like adult on adult passive aggressive humor and weirdness was like amazing to me. So like right off the bat, when Dumbledore and McGonagall are, I think this is when they're dropping Harry off, and Dumbledore offers her a lemon drop, and he says they're a kind of muggle sweet I'm rather fond of, and Professor McGonagall says, "No, thank you," coldly, as though she didn't think this was the moment for lemon drops. And as a kid reading that, I just saw everything about the lemon drop, McGonagall turning down the candy, like everything about it. I was like, these books are going to be so funny and weird and quirky and like interesting. So it's like not a huge moment. It was just like that moment for me as a kid was just so like weirdly magical.
It's a sign what's to come.
I was like, I'm so excited about this lemon drop loving man. I'm Dumbledore trash, so
and his non lemon drop thinking appropriate co-worker.
Yes. I McGonagall is like my actual favorite, but Dumbledore is like my fake horrible favorite. And anytime the two of them speak to each other is like my favorite thing.
And of course, she's been a cat. Yeah. And lemon drops are like beneath
like
her.
Like if you have a mouse, take that.
There's a lot of characterization going on in that moment. I mean, it's one of those moments that authors have to appreciate as like packed with characterization in very few words, which is really awesome. My first, right off the bat, is kind of random, but for some reason, it just always cracks me up. It's in book 3 when the night bus is picking up Harry Potter and he sees the Grim, and he gets knocked backward by the night bus, and he's surprised, and Stan Shunpike leans out and he says, "What you doing down there?" And Harry says, "I fell over." And Stan says, "What you fall over for?" And Harry says, "I didn't do it on purpose. There's something about that that's just completely silly that I absolutely love."
Yeah, so mine is kind of in the vein of what Caitlin said she likes, in that the first thing that occurred to me was when Dumbledore meets the Dursleys and he's like offering them drinks. And when they don't accept the drinks keep like more aggressively assaulting the Dursleys. And I know it's kind of mean, but it's It's also awesome. I just loved it. I loved how the drinks like had a mind of their own.
I'm marking that one off my list.
Yeah, that was on my list too. I have to cross it off.
It's really like categories. If there's a repeat, you gotta cross it off your list.
Yeah, there's more though from that scene. There's more. We've not plumbed it yet.
Okay. All right. Louise, you're up next.
Okay. This is when Neville is coming out of the portrait in Aberforth's home and explaining to Harry and Ron and Hermione what's been going on at Hogwarts all year. And he's telling them about how the Death Eaters tried to kidnap his grandmother. And the line is, Dawlish is still in St. Mungo's and Gran's on the run. That was one that my daughter and I just laughed hysterically over. I mean, poor Dawlish. At the, you know, you picture this as a taunt on the Hogwarts Quidditch pitch. Yeah, you couldn't even beat Longbottom's grandmother. Well, Dawlish can no longer beat Longbottom's grandmother.
Well, and what's great about that is it's very spare, and it doesn't tell you exactly what happened, but it gives you enough details that you're filling it in yourself in a very amusing way.
Grandmother Longbottom is just this, you know, this with the vulture hat and everything like that on her. She's just sort of this comic looking character anyway. You can just sort of see her knocking this overly proud Auror on his flat and then packing up her little handbag and going on the run.
Going underground. All right, Caitlin, you're up now.
Okay, so one of my other ones, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, later. I'm not a huge fan of toilet humor or any of that. And I know there's a lot of that, especially with the Weasley twins. But I love when the Weasley twins either are making fun of Percy or messing around with their mom. And those are like, I think those are amazing. And this is like a flip on that where she's kind of like Molly Weasley's kind of messing with them. When Ron gets made prefect and she says, I don't believe it. Oh, Ron, how wonderful, a prefect. That's everyone in the family. And then George says, Waterfront and I next door neighbors. And like the burn from Molly to Fred and George, and then the reaction from George, I just thought was like amazing. I love it.
That's good.
Okay, that one's crossed off my list too. I had that one.
Oh my gosh. Emily.
Am I up?
Yes.
Me? Okay, all right. Short and sweet. When Rita Skeeter in book 7 refers to Bathilda Bagshot as being as nutty as squirrel poo.
Oh.
It's pretty much the most bizarrely accurate insult/description that I've ever heard.
Okay, so it's me. I'm up again, and I'm going to go with the very first line of the book. Very first book, Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of Number 4 Privet Drive were very proud to say that they were perfectly normal, thank you very much, which I just love. As just a classic
line.
That's a
great one too, yeah, I love it.
And, you know, you would be proud to be perfectly normal. And then I like the thank you very much. It's a little bit aggressive, you know?
Yeah, and I in my research into reviews, like negative reviews of Harry Potter, like some of the critics, like, dissed that. They were like, oh, that's so trite and so cutesy. They called it cutesy. I was like, come on!
It's right up there. Thank you very much
in particular.
It's right up there with Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice. It's that memorable to me.
Totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
All right. Okay. Louise, we're back to you again.
The beginning of book 5, when Harry is taking Dudley back into the Dursleys after they've been attacked by the Dementors, and the owls start swooping in, delivering letters. There's like one every 30 seconds coming in. There's first the one expelling him, and there's one from Sirius, and then there's one from Arthur, and then there's one from Dumbledore. And Uncle Vernon, of course, is getting dive-bombed by these owls every time, and he's just getting more and more angry and more explosive with each owl. And I remember my daughter just giggling over every time Uncle Vernon would get dive bombed by an owl. So
the owls are so funny. I think the owls in general are funny.
Yeah, I didn't think about animal humor. That's a really big part
I love the owls demanding money for the newspaper, like sticking out the leg.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to pay your bill, man.
Yeah.
And how about Errol?
And Hedwig is very, they're very expressive.
Hedwig is sassy.
Yeah, she's very sassy.
But Errol just completely incapable of getting from one place to the next.
Yeah.
Pigwidgeon is just a little.
And their exasperation with him. Yeah.
I just think all the owls are just hilarious. That was
Pigwidgeon is just a category on my list. He's just he's just like just Pigwidgeon. Anytime he's in a scene, he's funny.
All right, Caitlin.
All right, I'm gonna have to do the Twitter thing. Which rock star Lauren Fairweather reminded me of my favorite Luna moment, which I had totally forgotten. In Half-Blood Prince, when Harry dyes his eyebrow yellow in class and forgets about it, and then when he and Luna are at Slughorn's Christmas party. She assumes that he did it on purpose for the party and offers to dye her eyebrows to match. Should I do mine too?
That's so Luna.
I know. That's probably one of my favorite Luna moments where she's just like, this is obviously something that has to get done. And I'm like, oh, Luna, accident, normal person accident.
It's weird just, and sweet. It's weird and sweet.
Wonderful. I laughed over that a lot in not a very funny book.
Actually, I'm going to have to argue. I'm going to have to push back on that because I think Six is the funniest of all the books.
It is. Yes, there is a lot of rom-com. There's not as much play on words and like that sort of that subtle humor that Luna kind of brings to the table, even when things get dark.
Right.
She kind of never stops doing it.
Yeah. I just finished listening to the movies episode that you guys just put out. And I realized when... Janet Batchelor was talking about Six. It's true. Very little happens in the book until the end, except it's like people in a room talking, which is like, you know, both book and movie nightmare. You know, I mean, it's like, that's very difficult sell for people, but a lot of what takes the place of the action is these romantic comedies. And it's just, it's fascinating. Sorry. I'm getting us out of our round robin, but
yeah.
Okay. But I think you are up next, Emily. Give us another funny moment.
Oh, so I'll give you another one from book six because my son and I just read over it. When Hermione is informing Harry at the beginning of when they just get back to Hogwarts and Harry's, you know, he's always a little out of touch and Hermione's informing him of how all the girls in school feel about him now that, you know, he's the chosen one. He's grown about a foot over the summer and Ron keeps interjecting attractive things about himself. Like Ron has no part in the conversation except for him to be like, well, I went to the ministry as well. I was also in the DA. I'm tall. It's just so sad. It's just so sad. I know.
It's so obvious. It's so obvious.
I know. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go for bad. I'm going to go right for it. Aberforth and his inappropriate relationship with the goat. Come on. What is that? What is she doing putting that in the children's novel?
What's a thing like that doing locked up in a school?
Well, the funniest part about that one to me is what he says at the end is that, well, I'm not sure Aberforth can read, so that may not be
that.
All right, Louise.
Okay. This is from Order of the Phoenix, right after the Quibbler article has come out and the teachers are starting to join the anti-Umbridge campaign as best they could. The teachers were, of course, forbidden from mentioning the interview by Educational Decree number 26, but they found ways to express their feelings about it all the same. Professor Sprout awarded Gryffindor 20 points when Harry passed her a watering can. A beaming Professor Flitwick pressed a box of squeaking sugar mice on him at the end of Charms and said, shh, and hurried away. And Professor Trelawney broke into hysterical sobs during divination and announced to the startled class and a very disapproving Umbridge that Harry was not going to suffer an early death after all, but would live to a ripe old age, become Minister for Magic, and have 12 children.
I love that it's also character driven too. You know, those are very characteristic of those particular individuals. All right, Caitlin.
I have another Fred and George one and Molly and Percy. So it's when George and Fred are making fun of Percy just being pompous, which is basically all the time. And so it's Harry, said Fred, elbowing Percy out of the way and bowing deeply. Simply splendid to see you, old boy. Marvelous, said George, pushing Fred aside and seizing Harry's hand in turn. Absolutely spiffing, Percy scowled. That's enough now, Mrs. Weasley said. Mum, said Fred, as though he'd only just spotted her and seizing her hand too. How really corking to see you.
That whole paragraph gets me every time. That's good. Am I up?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Three words. The Rotfang conspiracy. Okay. That is a conspiracy that Luna names, that the Aurors of the Ministry of Magic are seeking to bring down the Ministry of Magic from the inside with a combination of dark magic and gum disease. The Rotfang conspiracy.
Okay, so I'm going to jump ahead on my list just because this matches up so well with yours, Emily. But really, I just want to say all the Quibbler stuff, if I can do that. The Crumplehorn Snorkak, the Nargles. I love the Dirigible Plums. Come on, that's all comedy gold.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Louise.
Well, I had an occasion to chat with my young friend Thomas this morning. He's 10 years old. Mm. I told him about the podcast and I asked him what he thought the funniest moment in Harry Potter was. And he had an immediate answer, which was, eat slugs, Malfoy.
Oh.
And he acted it out for me. So that was good. So that's fine. Eat slugs, Malfoy. And that the aftermath.
That one gets a lot of mileage and puffs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Puffs, stay tuned, listeners. We will talk about that in a little while.
Yeah.
All right, Caitlin.
Okay, this is when Molly Weasley's trying to send Harry a letter. Harry held up the envelope in which Mrs. Weasley's letter had come, and Harry had to fight down a laugh. Every bit of it was covered with stamps except for a square inch on the front, into which Mrs. Weasley had squeezed the Dursley's address in minute writing. She did put enough stamps on then, said Harry, trying to sound as though Mrs. Weasley's was a mistake anyone could make. And that teenage sarcasm struck a very strong chord with me, a fellow teenage sarcasm person.
A little classic understatement for yours.
Uh-huh. Love that.
So you got to hand it to her. She did.
She did put enough stamps on then. So,
yeah, Harry has his moments.
He does. He does. I don't think he's like particularly funny. And well, we can talk about this later too. I feel like J.K. Rowling kind of uses him as a conduit for him and Dumbledore very often.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
Her own brand of humor.
This isn't on my list, but the line very similar. When Snape tells him to call him sir, and he goes, there's no need to call me sir, professor.
That got on our Facebook as well. So that's one that our listeners had singled out too. I'm going to say Nearly Headless Nick. What a fantastic ghost that is. You know that he's nearly headless? I just think it's the best. And of course, I love his name also, which is Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington. I mean, Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington. What a name. And then he's nearly headless. It's great. And I love that John Cleese then played him in the movie because it's such a Monty Python kind of thing.
Yep. It is a Monty Python kind of thing.
All right. Okay. So, Louise, we're back to you.
This is from the first book when Hagrid and the kids are sending Norbert off on his journey. And, of course, Hagrid's crying because he doesn't want to lose Norbert. But he's got lots of rats and some brandy for the journey, said Hagrid in a muffled voice. And I packed his teddy bear in case he gets lonely. From inside the crate came ripping noises that sounded to Harry as though the teddy bear was having his head torn off.
That whole thing with Hagrid and the way that he like mothers the very dangerous, violent animals. I just think that's always good for good laugh, blast ended scroots and all that.
Yeah, Hagrid's various delusions are often, very comedic.
Excellent. All right, Caitlin, what's your next one?
This is a Dumbledore one. I don't mean to be rude, he began in a tone that threatened rudeness in every syllable. Yet, sadly, accidental rudeness occurs alarmingly often, Dumbledore finished the sentence bravely.
That's That's awesome.
That is also on my list.
Is that really?
That is also on my list. And yeah, and I, because I just ran across it recently because my son and I are about halfway through book six, and I was like, what a great response for the next time somebody says, starts a comment with, well, I'm not racist, but, or I don't mean to be racist, but, or I don't mean to be sexist, or I don't mean to be whatever that they're about to be with what they're going to say. Yeah. So just to cut it off and just be like, and yet,
I have used that response. Sometimes I whisper it and like weirdly, but people are like, I don't want to be rude, but like, and I'm like, and yet, rudeness occurs alarmingly often. And they're like, what is that weird nerd talking about?
So mine is a quote from Hagrid. It is when he is introducing his brother, Grop, to Harry and Hermione. And Grop tries to grab Hermione, and Hagrid goes, bad boy, Groppy, you don't grab. That's so funny to me.
Like he's like it's a, he like he's say, a toddler.
You don't grab girls, or you don't grab... Right, exactly. Grab your friends.
Okay, so I told you I had a funny food category. So I'm just going to bring up all of the candies because I think the candies are hilarious and awesome and also very disturbing, like cockroach clusters, Bertie Bott's every flavor beans. I mean, what kind of craziness is that? You know, earwax flavored jelly bean. And fizzing Whizbees, and I know there are a bunch that I'm forgetting. And I also love how the chocolate frog like escapes out the window. You know, those are just great little, they're just little things. So that's my funny foods.
The blood lollipops was always a weird one.
Ooh.
And then they were like, oh, I think only vampires like those. I was like, well, yeah.
Like, who else likes specialty
blood
candy?
Lollipops? Like, what is that?
All right, Louise, have you got another one?
Oh, yeah. This is Peeves' final line. We did it. We bashed him. We Potter's the one. And Voldy has gone moldy. So now let's have fun. And then followed by Ron's response. Really gives a feeling for the scope and tragedy of the thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, Peeves is such a mischievous, you know, funny, troublemaking character. He gets a lot of good lines, I think, with like the Valentines and... Because all of these things are really funny. Caitlin.
This is another Monty Python-esque one. When Harry's taking Hedwig to the staff room when she's been injured, the two gargoyles on either side of the door stop and question him. And Gargoyle 1 says, you should be in class, Sonny Jim. And then Harry says, this is urgent. And Gargoyle 2 says, ooh, urgent, is it? Well, that's put us in our place, hasn't it? And just why would a gargoyle ever say Sonny Jim to me?
Sonny Jim.
Sonny Jim? Like, what?
That just reminds me of when the mirror, when Harry's trying to fix his hair and the mirror tells him, you're fighting a losing battle, dear.
Yeah, the magical objects, the humor of the magical objects is also a good, really good one.
Yeah, a whole category unto itself. All right, Emily.
All right, I'm just going to say this one before somebody else does. Runel Waslib. Okay, Runel Waslib.
That's my nickname.
Yep. Because that's just hilarious.
I know. It's not only the name is funny, but the suggestion that it's Harry's nickname. It's like, think fast. What's your cover?
Yeah, right. I also like, and sorry, I'm slipping in one more. I really like when Harry on the night bus gives Neville's name instead of his own. And then even after Stan Shunpike knows that it's Harry Potter, he keeps calling him Neville.
No, you're Harry Potter.
That is such a good one, Emily. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That just occurred to me.
Yeah, that was on my list. So great minds. Okay, so I'm also going to, now I'm going to do a whole category. All the Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. The Tongue Toffee, the Portable Swamp. Now, Emily, you and I were talking about You Know Poo. You know,
oh yes,
that's good stuff. The canary creams that turn you into a canary. I love the skiving snack boxes, pygmy puffs. How about the fake wands? And you think you have a wand, and it turns
puking
into a
pastels.
Rubber chicken. Puking pastels, yes,
that's great.
All of those things. Oh, edible dark mark. Edible dark mark.
Yeah,
I love that. It's so cheeky.
Who thinks of that?
Yeah, and all their little sayings as well, the gimmick.
I guess they're trying to appeal to Death Eaters, right? Death Eaters, sure. Right?
Oh, right. Of course. So, you know, I'll slip in a second one, too, because I was also going to say, how funny is it that everybody refers to the totally scary villain as you-know-who or he who must not be named? I think those are really funny. They're sort of, they take a little bit of the sting out of him, I think. You-know-who.
They do. Well, that's what when Harry enters the world, he doesn't understand the gravity of the situation because the nickname for the bad guy is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like if they called him the Dark Lord, he would be like, oh, I get it. The Dark Lord. That makes sense. But you know who is almost comical. It is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Louise.
Okay. I've got two more anti-Umbridgeons. I'm going to share them both. Okay.
Sure.
One is very short. It's in the aftermath of the fireworks, when the fireworks are running around the castle. And of course the professors are not really doing much about it. And this is from Flitwick. Thank you so much, professor, said Professor Flitwick in his squeaky little voice. I could have got rid of the sparklers myself, of course, but I wasn't sure I had the authority. Beaming, he closed the classroom door in Umbridge's snarling face. Okay.
Beautiful.
And then, coming back to it again, I guess this is ring theory for humor. I'm going back to another McGonagall Umbridge moment here. Umbridge inspecting McGonagall's class. I was wondering, Professor, whether you received my note telling you of the date and time of your Obviously, I received it, or I would have asked you what you are doing in my classroom, said Professor McGonagall, turning her back firmly on Professor Umbridge. Many of the students exchanged looks of glee. As I was saying, today we shall be practicing the altogether more difficult banishment of mice. Now, the banishing spell, hem, hem. I wonder, said Professor McGonagall in cold fury, turning on Professor Umbridge, how you expect to gain an idea of my usual teaching methods if you continue to interrupt me. You see, I do not generally permit people to talk when I am talking.
That's classic. Oh my gosh. All that stuff with awesome. The posturing with Umbridge is so great. Mm. Good stuff. All right, Caitlin.
In the theme of the Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, when Molly sees their store for the first time and she stops dead in her tracks and just says, Dobby killed them in their sleep. I thought that was amazing.
Mine is another quote from book six. It's in Dumbledore's memory of visiting Tom Riddle's orphanage. Mm. Quote, it soon became clear that Mrs. Cole was no novice when it came to gin drinking.
Oh, oh man.
It's just a great, it's just the line is packed. It is packed.
And that's the dark humor that's all throughout that book. It's like, oh my goodness.
She's going around that orphanage sauced all the time.
She's not a children's group of books anymore. This is not a children's series when there's alcoholics and murderers and all that.
Well, I'll just give a shout out to Molly Wobbles.
That's so cute.
The word mortified in that sentence is I had highlighted. Yeah, whispered a mortified Mrs. Weasley. I think the word mortified is like a very beautiful, like, linguistic word, and just like it describes so well the feeling of mortification.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of mortified in the Victorian sense of the word. Yeah.
We've said some funny characters already, but I think Gilderoy Lockhart is funny, and I love Mrs. Mm-hmm. Fig and her cats, Snowy, Mr. Tibbles, Tufty, and Mr. Paws. Like I just love that. I love the whole that whole bit. It's Sir Cadogan. Like he's also just totally hilarious. So all of those are good. And I have to share one more from our Facebook page. We've hit a bunch of them, but I thought this one, somebody just posted it. I thought it was kind of hilarious. When Fudge is leading the Bulgarian Minister of Magic around, I guess this is at the Quidditch World Cup, and he realizes that the Bulgarian Minister of Magic actually does speak English, and Fudge says, "You speak English? And you've been letting me mime everything all day." And the guy says, "Well, it was very funny." All right, so let's subject this to a little reflection. We've done a little reflection along the way, but when you were thinking about the funniest moments, what kinds of humor did you find you were gravitating to? And, you know, what do you think are the kinds of things that you think are being done particularly well here.
So yeah, I didn't use them a lot in examples, but I am a huge fan of the Dumbledore's dry wit, and just those like subtle verbal humor that's like kind of layered in, like nothing flashy, nothing fancy, anything that's like a play on words or yeah, someone like just subtly making fun of someone else or any observational humor. Like we said earlier, like it kicks off with this very observational humor about the Dursleys and it just kind of goes from there in this sarcastic commentary about muggles versus wizards and stupid people versus insanely clever people that, you know, J.K. Rowling kind of holds to a high standard. So she kind of does everything. But those were the ones that I particularly liked, especially as a kid.
And I think, Caitlin, one of the things that you had said when we were kind of going around about this as we were thinking about the show, you had mentioned like him talking about the Care of Magical Creatures professor retiring to spend his time with his remaining limbs.
Like anything, yeah, things like that that are like so small when you almost miss them when you're reading. You're like, spend time with reading limbs. Like, great, move on. And you're like, wait a minute. He has limbs. I get it. Care Medical Creatures. Got it. Yeah, it's like, yeah. And that's why when people say like, oh, I've read the Harry Potter books once, I'm like, what? Like, you need to read them, you know, more than once to get all these like extremely subtle jokes that she kind of laces through the entire series.
Oh, yeah. And now, Louise, it sounded like you actually had a lot of quotations that you were drawn to. Do you find it's like the way that she says things, or were there particular kind of humor that you found particularly attractive?
I found a lot of the snappy comebacks very funny. And of course, you sort of have to read those. They have to be in the original language to really to get the full effect. Like you, Caitlin, I really like the humor that you have to go back and revisit. Things like when it mentions that the Weasley twins had gotten punished for bewitching the snowballs, so they bounce off the back of Quirrell's turban.
Oh, yes.
You know, that's funny. That's a humorous moment. Much funnier once you realize that that was Lord Voldemort.
Again, second reading is very useful.
Him just sort of having to sit there and take it because he can't give himself away. But you're not going to get that the first time around. You're going to have to go back and reread that. One of my other subtle, but I think, you know, again, something that really requires a deep level of reading. Again, it's from that same scene. We quoted a couple of lines from it. When Dumbledore comes to visit the Dursleys at the beginning of book six, but when Uncle Vernon opens the door, the first thing he says to them is, I must say your agapanthus is flourishing. Well, agapanthus is a flower. The choice of that flower is funny on multiple levels. One, it's a very easy thing to grow. You do not have to be a good gardener to have your agapanthus flourish. Secondly, it's from the word agape, of love, which means love. So there's a lot of irony in that name, and that the Dursleys, who are this hateful aunt and uncle, have their plant named love. But it's also, its common name is Lily of the Nile, but it's not a member of the lily family. It's a false lily. Dumbledore is greedy Uncle Vernon by saying, oh, I see your false lily is flourishing.
Wow. And, course,
and it has the word.
The scene is him, you know, giving the Dursleys their comeuppance in a way. And he finally, you know, tells them, you know, you've been horrible guardians for Harry. The only thing I can say is you didn't damage him as much as you did Dudley. And they're, of course, completely oblivious and they're completely clueless as to what he's talking about. But it's, what I like too is that it's almost an inverse of the scene at the beginning of book two. Again, John will love us for bringing back the ring and reflections and stuff. But you know, book two begins with them trying to welcome a couple that Uncle Vernon wanted to do business with, and of course winds up
Mr. Mason.
Yes, yes, and they're of course you know, bowing and scraping, and Dudley's telling him, I wrote my school essay about you because you're. And so they're just trying to ingratiate themselves. They're trying to impress these visitors so much. And Dumbledore, they're just scared stiff by. And of course, there's that whole, I don't want to be rude, but would you please take care of and get out of here? You know, and that contrast, but just the fact that, you know, Dumbledore knows enough to come in and make his compliment of their flower actually a dig on how bad parents these folks are.
Emily, what about you? What kinds of humor do you in the Harry Potter books do you think you're gravitating toward?
You know, I think I've always been really attracted to the point of view choice that she makes throughout most of the books, which is, you know, third person limited omniscient, where we just get Harry's perspective on the events most of the time, with, you know, with just a few exceptions. And I love the humor that comes from the limitation of that perspective. When you have your character walk into a room and something funny is going on, but they're not clued in yet. So something happens, some misunderstanding usually happens because the perspective is limited. So this is on my list, but I didn't get a chance to mention it. But in book six, at the beginning, when he first arrives at the Burrow, and they're talking about Fleur Delacour, but he, who is now like this member of their family that, you know, all of a sudden, and the Weasleys and Harry, but Harry doesn't even know she's there yet. I mean, he's just woken up, and his, you know, Ron and Ginny and Hermione are all around his bed, and they're talking about her in these negative ways, the girls are, and they're going, well, that just seems kind of harsh on Mrs. Weasley, you know, because she's the only other female in the household. And Ginny says to Ron, well, we all know you can't get enough of her. Harry thinks this is an odd comment to make about Ron's mother, you know, and then all of a sudden Fleur bursts in the room. So then it's cleared up immediately and it's kind of resolved. But you get that nice tension, that nice comedic tension from Harry's lack of understanding, which is a great tool for an author to use to be able to pull that fast one on the reader as well.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm very drawn to the wordplay and the funny use of words and just funny sounds. Like when you were talking about Agapanthus, I was like, that's just a funny word. And you think about, I mean, Dumbledore, like who names your master magician figure, Dumbledore. It's just a great choice. And another one that was on my list that I didn't say was, I love it when the Weasley's ghoul that they have in their house is basically faking having spattergroit, and like what a fantastic disease name that is, spattergroit. It sounds really, really uncomfortable. And I just love the way that she's playing with words and she's just making things that sound really funny, and I'm just very drawn to that. And the other thing that I'm drawn to, that I like all the things that you all have said too, obviously, of course, but I like a lot of the gender things that she does. So one of the ones that is a fan favorite that we didn't mention was when, you know, Hermione is trying to explain to Harry why Cho might have cried after when Harry was kissing her. And she explains, like, she's thinking about this and she's thinking about that. And Ron just can't get it. And she says, you know, just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon, Ron, right? And that's just a little, it's funny because it's, you know, it's gender humor. It's like he doesn't get it. And when Ron, you know, we hear that Ron has tried to ask out Fleur Delacour, you know, and has failed spectacularly. And the stuff with Jenny's valentines that go awry with Harry in book two. And I just think a lot of that gender humor, Rowling has a lot of funny stuff to say about those. And maybe this is also like misunderstandings, you know, the things that you don't get because you're just coming at it from a different point of view. And I just think those are really fun.
Right.
Yeah. Another one in that category that I had on my list was when the boys are trying to find their dates for the Yule Ball. And he said, but Ron was staring at Hermione as though suddenly seeing her in a whole new light. Hermione, Neville's right. You are a girl. Oh, well spotted.
Oh, yeah. That was another one that got on the Facebook page, too. That's a classic one. Yes. Yeah. So funny. I know. Well spotted. Classic. And, you know, one of the things that we didn't mention, although we talked about it as we were listing out some of the things that in our round robin, was a lot of the dark humor. Do you find that you're drawn to the dark stuff and the humor that has a bit of a razor's edge to it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some really great examples. I mean, one thing that kept coming up for me over and over again is how often Rowling uses humor juxtaposed right next to tragedy. I mean, I guess the biggest example is when Fred dies. You know, Percy is there, he's dueling with Thickness, and he says, "Hello, Minister, have I mentioned I'm resigning?" And the twins turned to him and said, "Percy, I can't believe it. You're finally telling a joke. This is wonderful." And then boom. And of course, and Fred dies with the ghost of a laugh on his face. And when you think about some of the characters we laugh most at, Dobby, you know, we laugh at him all the way through. Colin Creevy, Fred, how tragically so many of these funny characters. You mentioned Hedwig, how funny the owls are, and yet some of these funniest characters actually have these very tragic deaths, and just the jolt that gives you, that's a pretty amazing thing. Again, I think a lot of the darker humor you really have to think about. I guess the example then, of course, is Umbridge startling at anything horse related after she's dragged off. Ron doing the clip clop noises in the hospital wing and making her startle. I mean, yes, that's incredibly funny. Isn't this cute? Until you think about what centaurs usually do to women, they drag off.
Yeah, it's a little vicious.
And you have to, And I mean, that's one of element of humor. Is that, you know, no one can actually get hurt. You know, once someone actually gets hurt, it's not funny anymore. Suddenly, it's not quite so funny. And I think there's a very powerful message in there. You know, would we even someone as completely loathsome and irredeemable as Umbridge, you know, how would we feel if she genuinely got gang raped? I mean...
Oof. Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, so this is not as dark as that, but I think, Emily, you and I have talked a little bit about being uncomfortable with this one that happens in the first book, in the very early part of it, when Hagrid gives Dudley a pigtail. And that actually was one of the things that my boys both said they thought was really funny in the books. It's satisfying because Dudley Dursley is, you know, he's just so... He's mean and spoiled and all of that. And it just feels like he gets his just desserts. And yet, like, he has to have that surgically removed. And he is in some ways also, he has not been well served by his own parents. Not totally responsible for the bad behavior that he's been portraying. And so that, I think you and I were talking about how it's sort of like, what do I think about that? At first, it's pretty funny. And then, I don't know.
And also, of course, it was Uncle Vernon that Hagrid was mad at. And
right.
He turns and he, you know, does this to his son. I mean, going after someone's kid because you're mad at them. I mean, that's pretty dark. You know, what I thought made it funny was that line. I said, you know, I was trying to turn him into a pig, but I guess he's so much like a pig already that there wasn't much left to do. That kind of softens it a bit. But I think that's another example.
Yeah.
So two things that I'm thinking of, and the first is what everybody's talking about in terms of the making humor out of really rather dark situations or keeping dark and light so close together in the storytelling. And that is something I'm sitting here with Bea Groves's book, literary illusion in Harry Potter.
Oh, yes.
And of course, Bea is a friend of this show and is just a wonderful spotter of all the intertextual moments of Harry Potter and most of English literature. But she talks about how this is one of the most overwhelmingly Shakespearean aspects of Harry Potter, about mixing the dark and light, how that those are just side by side throughout the narrative. And I mean, I think these moments of what we're talking about, you know, with the pig's tail and with Umbridge, you know, Umbridge's just desserts being really kind of more horrible than we can be named, you know, in a children's book. Mm-hmm. But I think this also points to, and again, the very, you know, just the surface level, you know, stuff I've been listening to about humor theory, you know, that it's so relational, that humor is so social and so relational and depends on relationships. And without the relationship, and not just the relationships between the characters, but the relationship that the reader has with the characters, without that relationship, that pigtail for Dudley is just straight up child abuse, you know, and without the relationship that we've had with Umbridge for the entire book, mm-hmm. then the centaur, you know, she's just, you know, horribly attacked by centaurs. But the, all of a sudden, you know, these, you know, like Katie, you said your kids think that's very funny because they note that Dudley is a pig. And again, there's something more complicated as an adult that I'm looking at it and going, all these things, you know, he's not really responsible for how spoiled he is, you know, he's all these things, but that's not operating in a kid's mind. Right. They're just seeing him being, having a tail to go with his piggy attitude and his piggy, you know, habits.
Right. And he was a bully as well. So I think maybe they're detecting that. They're like, this bully is getting his comeuppance because he was a bully 2 pages ago.
Right.
And now he has a pigtail. But I think as an adult as well, you kind of detect, I detect the power imbalances a little bit more than a kid would. Like, yeah, like I see now him giving Dudley a pigtail as, abuse to a kid who's basically innocent, even if he is a bully. And even when Harry got a little bit older, like everything the Dursleys did to him was terrible, obviously, but when Harry gets a little bit older and better at magic and clearly then has more power than the Dursleys, and he continues to be sarcastic and rag on them and all this stuff, it becomes a little bit more like Harry is bullying them and like they're not magical. They're actually in danger, right? So like they need to save the Dursleys, and the Dursleys are too dense or too delusional to understand that they're in actual physical danger. And then Harry has the upper hand and he's still treating them like he did when he was 11. And as an adult rereading that, I was kind of like, wow, like I'm not on the Dursley side, but I feel sympathetic that they don't understand the gravity of the situation. And Harry actually seems like he should have a bit more patience explaining to them exactly what's going on, because there is that power shift. Suddenly Harry has more power than the Dursleys do. Like, because there's so much abuse in the series and so much trauma that happens, I feel like I always kind of respected the dark humor as a defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. Like when they think that Harry is the heir to Slytherin and, you know, Harry's kind of like a pariah in school, and Fred and George are the only ones who are kind of making light of the situation. And they say, get out of the way. Harry's in a hurry. Yeah, he's nipping off to the Chamber of Secrets for a cup of tea with his fanged servant. And it's the only time when, like, everyone else is so, like, doom and gloom because, like, everyone's getting petrified. And Fred and George are kind of, like, parading through the school making jokes about it. And it's the only thing that's kind of keeping Harry afloat, like, mentally during this time.
Yeah. This pairing of the comic and the tragic, I think, is one of the things that a lot of humor theory talks about. And I also love the mentioning of Shakespeare as one of them. I when I think of the Dudley and the pigtail particularly, it makes me think of Roald Dahl and the way that the kids basically get their comeuppance, you know, appropriately for their misbehavior. And it's really kind of wrong and disturbing. And yet that's in that world. And I think J.K. Rowling's drawing on that realm of children's literature too. One of the things in this dark humor conversation that I think is worth bringing in is a point that our technical editor, Emma Nicholson, brought up when I mentioned to her we were doing this show. She said, this is such a great insight, that there are all these really important developments of character and plot that hinge upon humor gone wrong. You might think about, for example, Snape's worst memory, where it's a sort of joke that they're playing on Snape. And of course, then there's the joke that leads Snape down to the Shrieking Shack that could have gotten him killed by Lupin. These are jokes that have gone wrong. And definitely, I think there's a kind of power dynamic at play there, like you mentioned, Caitlin. Also, we can think about, you know, all the muggle baiting that the Death Eaters do, like at the Quidditch World Cup. And these are things that they seem funny to this group of people who are in a power position. And yet it feels like a violation. It feels actually very much not humor. And so when the humor can go so wrong, you know, how does that affect the way that we read some of these other funny moments in the book? What do you think is J.K. Rowling trying to say about that?
It's great. I really hadn't thought about it that way. But I mean, you know, what I think about, and again, I think this is probably a safer space with the whole authorial intent. She has got to be such a funny person, yeah. You know? And I think, you know, humor is also a mark of intelligence. You know, humor is something that I've been noticing lately in a few just interactions I've had with people in public where I have done or said something that, well, I thought it was pretty funny, but I was met with like kind of this weird suspicion. And so I think that there's something a little uncertain, and it was both by people of the opposite sex for me. And I was just like, okay, I think there's something maybe that's threatening about funny women. That's probably similar the threat that smart women pose, you know, like those two things kind of go together. And so, you know, that with her great intelligence comes great humor, or she just could not write the way that she writes if she wasn't herself a very funny person. And so I do wonder if that is born out of her own experience, that, you know, we've all, those of us who love to make people laugh, and that's most of us, we've all just done it and it epically failed, you know, just fallen right on our faces and made someone feel terrible, or made ourselves feel terrible, or made a situation worse. So I just wonder if that isn't sort of an embedded lesson from her own experience, saying, you know, hey, sometimes these things can go terribly wrong because of it, just trying to make people laugh.
And isn't that also kind of a theme of Jane Austen's Emma? Doesn't she get into trouble because she's kind of being funnier than she should? And that we've been talking about Austen is definitely an influence of J.K. Rowling. And maybe she's I think Beatrice Groves talks about that in Literary Illusion in Harry Potter, too, that there are these Emma references, and that maybe that's something that she's drawing on as well. I'm going to try a line that I read as I was doing some of this humor research. I'm not sure if I can be funny. It's Mel Brooks. So who can be as funny as Mel Brooks? But he says he's trying to define the difference between tragedy and comedy. And he says, tragedy is I cut my finger. Comedy is you fall into an open sewer and die. So I know I can't carry that off. But it's very dark. Right. There is that sense of, you know, and what happens to me. A little thing that happens to me is perceived as a tragedy, but you know, something like that, I can really laugh at that. And I think,
well, I think that's part of what's going on with the pigtail, you know, where if that happened to our own kid, even if our own kid was acting a brat, we would be incensed, and it would be child abuse. But because it's happening to these people over here who are so foreign to us in all of the right ways, you know, they're mean and they're bullying, then that's okay. They've fallen into the manhole, and that's hilarious, you know, but we don't actually, we're not experiencing their suffering.
Well, I think, you know, part of the reason humor works so well in a magical universe is that the potential for long-term harm is just not as great as it would be. I mean, the Skiving Snack boxes, you know, it's not really funny to give something to people to eat to make them sick. But when you can take the other half of it and get well just as quickly, that becomes a lot more humorous. The little poor little Neville falling off his broom and breaking his wrist. That's would not be funny in the real world. But when you have, you know, a school nurse who can fix it instantly, then suddenly that level of injury, you know, rather than just tripping over a banana peel, you're falling off a broom and breaking your wrist, can be funnier because you can fix it instantly.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I think Rowling does so well is create this world where you can have this magical stuff and that you can have these pranks or whatever it is, these things happen. And because they can be fixed so easily, it can be funnier than it might otherwise be, but also have certain types of magic that can't be undone, like going through the veil or getting your ear blasted off with the Sectum Sempra curse or various things like that. You know, there's limits to how reversible the magic is. And so, you know, that puts a limit on how funny an injury or a, you know, cursing someone or turning someone into making someone vomit slugs or this thing they did to Crabbe and Goyle when all the DA cursed them at the train station at the end and turned them into looking like slugs and various things like that.
How about the bat bogey curse? The bat bogey curse. I love that.
Yeah. And that type of
boogers like bats attacking you. I love it. But it wouldn't be fun in real life.
The position to that. Right. No, any of that. The fact that the Avada Kedavra curse is a sudden death is, I think, a really excellent, like, well, a terrible gothic morbid ribbon on that. Like, you can do almost anything in the magical world and come back from it. And even when I was reading the book for the first couple times, the fact that the killing curse was so sudden, like, in the entirety of the magical world, you point your wand at someone and say two words and they drop dead and you can't come back from it, I thought was at first, like, not very creative. And then on the flip side, I was like, oh, wow, yes, like, it is. That's the way that everyone just dies. There's no weird death or death spell and all this different stuff. Like your old great uncle can drop you out of a window to see if you're magical, like happens to Neville and he bounces down the sidewalk. You can't drop a baby out of a window, like, in the real world. So, like, things like
don't
that. Like,
try
I
this that, at
I was
home.
Like, oh my goodness, right.
So, well, I do think I'm glad you mentioned Roald Dahl, Katie, because I do think that he's that kind of humor. I mean, like, you know, the BFG, I mean, those giants, the names, the only one I remember is Child Chewer, but I mean, like, that's enough to remember of his name is Child Chewer. I mean, that's just terrifying. And these are stories that are meant to be read to children. There's just something I've always thought it was refreshing in Harry Potter, the kind of darkness, the lack of bubble wrap, you know, in the wizarding world. Where kids are, you know, in Harry's first year, Dumbledore gets up and gives a very Roald Dahl sort of warning about the third floor corridor, right? Mm-hmm. And finally, I must tell you that this year, the third floor corridor on the right-hand side is out of bounds to everyone who does not wish to die a very painful death. You know, like, what? Again, Ron's line, what's a thing like that doing locked up in a school?
Yeah. Right? And the little kids laugh. The first years laugh at that, and none of the older kids do because they know that can happen.
Yeah.
Whereas the younger kids are like, drop out of a window, dog in the school, like all magic must be fun and games. And it's not.
Well, if you want a magical education, you're going to be in a place where if you wander into the wrong corridor, you could just get killed, you know? So, but I do think that I like that aspect of Roald Dahl's books as well. I don't think her books, she's been compared to Roald Dahl a lot. I don't think her books are a lot like Roald Dahl's, but I think in this way they are. It's that kind of almost gallows humor that make you feel like even though you're in a fantasy world, you really are living in the real world. There's no bubble wrap here.
There's a kind of direct justice that's happening that's terrifying and sort of funny at the same time. I think both of them are enacting. So that wraps up part one of this episode on humor and Harry Potter. You will definitely want to stay tuned for part two of this episode, where we will dive into why the humor matters in these stories, its effect on the themes, and the appeal of Rowling's work. Thanks to our guests, Louise Freeman and Caitlin Harper, and thanks to you, Emily Strand. It's always wonderful to talk Potter with you by my side.
You are very welcome. Hey, Katie.
Yes?
Maybe we should open a joke shop.
A joke shop. Strand and McDaniels, I don't know.
I love it.
It's not as good as the Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
We'll have to think of some alliteration for it. Yeah,
right.
It needs some.
We can come up with something. All right, we'll work on it.
Yeah.
I'd like to give a big thanks to our technical editor in Australia, Emma Nicholson. Thanks for all you do, Emma. We could not do this without you.
Yay, Emma!
And as always, we appreciate our partners at MuggleNet, the number one Harry Potter fan site, and our MuggleNet producer, Lori Beckoff. Speaking of which, dear listeners, we are so glad you joined us for this part one of the Humor in Harry Potter episode. And we would love it if you would leave a comment or question for us. Please share your thoughts at readingwritingrolling@gmail.com, readwriteroll on Twitter, or on our Facebook page. And thanks to everyone who answered our post asking about your favorite funny moments. And again, please stay tuned for part two, where we will continue this discussion. And now, listeners, I leave you with the wisdom of Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore, who said, "I would like to say a few words, and here they are. Nitwit, Blubber, Oddment, Tweak, thank you." We'll see you next time, when we'll be using our words to have some fun and make some magic.